Welcome to the show. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. I have a great show for you today. My guest is Rob Franco from the band The Venus Illuminato. Rob is not only a talented guy, but also an extremely entertaining and funny guy. He tells great stories. He talks about acting, food truck, music, and he fights a monkey. So this is a good episode. So before we get to that, I'd like to do some business. I'm playing a solo acoustic show at the Saxon Pub here in Austin, Texas next Wednesday, May 27th at 10:30 p.m. Come on out, check that out if you are in Austin. I'll be singing some songs and playing some guitar. Then I have great news. We have a live podcast coming up Wednesday, June 19th at Strange Brew here in Austin, Texas. I've reached out to a lot of people today and I've already gotten confirmations back from Nakia and the boxing lesson. So I'll keep on letting you know who the guests are. Please come out to that. Please come out to the show on Saxon Pub. Should be good. And other than that, I've had a kind of an uneventful week. I had some dental stuff done last week. I'll spare you the details, but it was a pain in the ass. I'm feeling better though, and you know, getting ready, going out of town this weekend with Skyrocket, do a couple of weddings, and been doing a lot of podcast interviews. Got one actually coming in just a little while. So hey, thank you for listening to this show. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. And I guess let's get on with the show. All right. My guest today is Rob Franco from the band The Venus Illuminato. They're a band that started out in California, out in Los Angeles, and made their way out to Austin. Rob is a very, very interesting character. He used to live here in the mid-2000s, and I produced a record for a band that he was in called Dragonfly Jones. Sadly, they broke up before the record came out, but we did have a good time hanging out and making a record and being friends, and we've been pals ever since. He's a great guy. He's extremely funny. In this interview, we talk about kind of how he came to be Rob and kind of his adventurous soul. He kind of travels around and lives in teepees at times in his life, and fought a monkey. So there's a lot to talk about, and his music's really good. So it's very epic, this Venus Illuminato. It's very big music. It's very very big. It's awesome. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with my good friend, Rob Franco from the Venus Illuminato. Let's get down. Jam, man. You know, I could hear that at even a DJ guy that remixes shit doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just opening up with that.
Or no, you know, like
like a DJ.
Doing like a dance remix of that song.
Okay.
You could do that even.
I think that's right.
Do you feel they're very epic, these songs.
Thank you.
They are. They're very epic.
Thank you.
Rob Franco.
Hello.
Great. Rob Franco.
It's good to see you, sir.
It's good to see you. You've had a lot of coffee. You have a lot to drink on your table.
Yeah, I became prepared.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call it champagne, even though it's Prosecco, because
I like Prosecco.
Yeah, but I feel like champagne, and this is something earlier I posted on the Facebooks. a picture of the champagne, which is Prosecco, and people, and I said, hey, champagne, never too early, you know, just trying to
Come on, charming.
And everybody goes, no, that's not champagne. And I'm like, I know, but it's a that's a celebratory generalization, champagne.
Here's something we can get into right off the bat.
Boom.
Everyone's a quote-unquote foodie now.
Right.
And they know the difference between champagne and Prosecco, Prosecco, however you say it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and you got a food trailer?
Yeah, I do. I own a
you
little restaurant.
Do? Yeah. Where is it?
It's outside. It's behind Cheer Up Charlie's. It's called Arlo's.
Okay. Yeah, no, I knew it was called Arlo's. Yeah. Who was it? Your fabulous dog?
Arlo was my dog. Yeah, he was...
I loved him.
He was a great,
great dog.
Great man. Strange little dog. And by little, I mean pretty big dog.
So, what are you, vegetarian, right?
Yeah, vegan.
Yeah, vegan.
Yeah.
Are you vegan, you yourself?
I am indeed. And I know I look sick and pale and weak.
No, you look...
But I'm vegan.
How do you get your protein?
Years. Oh, man. If I have that question one more time. I've been getting that question since I was like 11 years old.
That's the main question.
Yeah, but it's like a myth, the protein phenomenon.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
Well, that's what, you know, your grandparents and stuff
exactly.
tell
you. And where's grandma and grandpa now?
They're over 90 years old.
Okay, well, then maybe I still need to start eating the T-bones.
All right, so the Venus Illuminato.
Yes.
This is a project that you started in what, in California?
Yeah, yeah, in LA like 6 years ago, I guess now. Something like that.
That's when you moved out there?
Yeah, yeah.
What made you move out there?
I don't even know. I was just kind of changing it up, you know? I get restless pretty easily, so Austin had done for me what it had done for me, you know? And then I went down to Central Mexico, to Guadalajara for a little while, lived there for a little bit, and then... lived in a teepee at a wildlife sanctuary for a while, and then, yeah.
No, you have that. Like, you've always seemed like that to me, like some dude that just kind of like, seems like you'd be in a Volkswagen van all the time.
Yeah,
like
that was Sweet Pea. Yeah. And I did. Sweet Pea. Me and Arlo traveled the country in Sweet Pea, and then we lived in a teepee. So.
So what was Mexico like? What'd you do down there? Did you write?
No, yeah. I mean, I did, but that's not what I was doing there. I was actually teaching English. I got certified to teach English in the
Oh, that's awesome.
And I didn't really care about getting certified to teach English. I just wanted a reason to move to another place. And that was like my vehicle to get there.
Wow.
So there you go.
Yeah. And let's figure out a good place to start. Okay. With the Venus Illuminato, before that, you played in Dragonfly Jones.
Right.
We did an album together that didn't come out because you guys broke up.
Right. At the time. Yeah.
So let me say this. That was more of a Southern rock band.
Yeah.
You would say.
Yeah.
It was still very, you're still like to me, you're kind of like a soul, like a Southern soul singer from the Southeast kind of guy.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think
that's a good thing.
There's I think that's where most of my influence comes from. Yeah. Just not intentionally, but that's kind of
the
stuff I'm drawn to, you know?
Yeah. How did you make that transition? Did you do it on your own when you're living in Mexico or in a teepee? Did you make this change in music to more of this epic kind of, what would you call this music?
That I would love to know what this is called.
Because it goes from like that song that we just heard that intro, the thing is very different than other ones. I mean, there are ones that go from like kind of this acoustic guitar kind of like the Civil War song. And then it goes into this giant jam at the end with like riffs and shit.
Yeah. And there's a lot of violin and stuff like classical violin.
Yeah. There's violin going through it.
Well, it kind of came, the whole project came kind of out of necessity. By that, I mean, I started playing on my own, writing some songs, and I never liked that. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to put down the guitar and be an obnoxious front man in women's pants, snap kicking people in the coin purse. You know what I mean?
That was your jam in Dragonfly Jones.
Yeah, yeah. And so I really missed that. And anytime I was just me and a guitar, I felt really awkward and just, it's not my thing. I just don't enjoy it, you know? So moved out to LA. When I used to live in New York City, and one of my best friends there kind of put me in touch with this guitar player who was in this big giant kind of prog psychedelic instrumental band where like every song was like 13 minutes long with like 40 changes, you know, not really my thing, but they needed a singer or were attempting to have a singer. So they pulled me in and we did that for a while. And again, it wasn't really a good fit for me. And then that band broke up
But in that situation, it's something to do. You get on stage, you get to get out there and kind of meet some more people.
Right. And the guitar player in that band is who I'm still working with. Okay. Because what happened
was... And what's his name?
Brandon Kennedy.
Brandon Kennedy.
Brandon Kennedy.
Is he a Kennedy?
He is a Kennedy.
But
now,
not
is he
one of
a
those.
Kennedy?
Yeah.
I don't... I think I would know. No.
Yeah, you'd know by
he
now.
He would tell me.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that would let me know immediately.
Yeah. So go ahead. Sorry.
Not a problem. That big psych thing that we did, kind of fell apart. Again, we just weren't doing that much. And then I went, you know what? Screw this. I talked to him. I was like, let's do something that we can do if we don't have the rest of this band, which was these like acoustic songs that I had never really put out into the world because I was apprehensive because that was never my thing.
Right. And those were ones that you wrote over time, forever?
Right. And those were these little kind of, weird old worldy gypsy ballads with the violin concept.
There's songs that even have like a Tom Waits vibe.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, like
for
almost
sure.
Like a circus kind of thing.
Yeah, which is another, that's kind of the one other thing I really like is like that kind of weird Tom Waitsian stuff. And then I like, old school like Zeppelin, Stones. I mean, I get all the standards, you know. But so we started writing some stuff and we put an album together and kind of just pulled in players. And then that evolved into what the Venus Illuminato started as, which was the first album was this very psychedelic folk gypsy thing.
Right.
The first album called Company with Kings. And then little by little, as we added more members to the band, it evolved back into a rock and roll thing. So it's just kind of been continuously, moving around.
So you went way off and then came back with some more, brought in some more rock.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where are you from? You from Bernie?
Yeah. Well, small town Texas boy.
I always thought that place was called Bourne.
Everybody does. It's spelled very bizarrely.
Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie, Texas. What did you, where were your parents? What was going on there?
What was going on
there? You have a brother, right?
Yeah, got an older brother.
Didn't I meet him?
Probably.
Doing stuff?
Yeah. I think he was out at some point. He lives in LA. He was in New York at the time, too. But
okay.
He's in LA. But,
So you, Bernie, you got an older brother, and your parents were...
Growing up, my parents, great childhood. My dad was from Brooklyn.
Yeah?
Born and raised.
How did he end up going to Bernie?
Through like the military, traveling around and stuff like that.
And then he went to San Antonio and kind of like Bernie or
and
something?
Then, like, and then got, started a business and then got married and then...
What kind of business?
An electronics wholesale industry called Imtronics.
That's awesome. So, in San Antonio?
Yeah. Super like 70s, like where... there's all these photos with like wide ties and short sleeve button down shirts, drinking scotch and smoking cigarettes up at the counter.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
That is awesome.
The place still exists and not much has changed there. So
is it
a lot of mustaches and short sleeve button down shirts with like fat ties.
And he's still working there?
No, he passed away.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
And your mom, what was her?
She worked for him.
Okay.
So, and they worked together. She was co-owner of the business. She's still in the same place in Bernie. I still have the same house.
Yeah,
I go back to visit.
Remember you going to visit there.
Which is pretty cool to be, my childhood home still exists.
Yeah. And so what did you, how did you come across music? Was it your older brother that hooked you up? How did you?
I don't know. I thought I was going to be an actor, which we'll get to, I think.
Of course.
Yeah, that's right. If you can't see this, I just winked at Johnny. Yeah, we'll get there. I thought I was going to be an actor growing up, and I always played music on the side, but I never had the patience to stick to an instrument. And my brother is like this phenomenal pianist and this very focused person where, I'm all over the place. So he would just, be practicing diligently. And I played like violin, trumpet, saxophone, piano. So I guess I was really musical, but I didn't even really realize it because I was always like, I don't want to practice. I want to go run around outside with my fake guns,
Yeah. Sure.
So I was more interested in acting. And then that's when I moved to New York,
Were you in plays at school?
Yeah.
Theater?
Yeah.
Drama? Did people see something? I mean, I could see just knowing you.
Yeah.
You seem like you would be a great actor.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
But I didn't think I was for a really long time, which is why I'd ever pursued anything. I studied and I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York City.
How did that go?
It was one of the most amazing times in my life, but it made me realize I needed to be doing music, at least at that point in my life, because I got overwhelmed and intimidated there because there were so many of these kids there that were these brilliant actors that it's like that's what they were studying and focusing on and like really character development. And I was just like, man, I want to be a movie star. I want to you know, I want to be Bruce Lee, you know, so.
Hey, you do karate. I saw some face. I was going through your Facebook pictures.
I do not do karate. Let's go ahead and fix this right now.
Okay, what's the...
Wing Chun Kung Fu as well as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay, see, I don't know the difference. Man, to me, it's all Kung Fu or karate or something.
That's fine.
So say it again. What is it?
I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Wing Chun Kung Fu. I actually used to, I grew up doing...
Wing Chun Kung Fu sounds made up.
I know. I actually used to teach Wing Chun.
So you seem like you'd be able to kick someone's ass. Have you ever had to do that? You're so nice, though.
I know. I don't like to fight. I compete now, which that's some of those photos. I actually compete, which is great because I love the physicality of fighting. All my family, my dad was a professional boxer also.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
that's cool.
My family, I come from like a line of like Italian boxers in like the 40s in Brooklyn, like the complete stereotype. They were like musicians and boxers.
Yeah.
So like the fighting, I love the physical aspect of it. Like it's human chess, but I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or I'm never mad enough to want to fight in real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
but I started competing kind of recently, but.
What happens in a competition? Tell me about that.
Well.
How long have you been doing it? Like when did you start when you were a kid?
The competing?
No, just practice.
I started when I was a kid, practice.
Did you start with the Wang Chun Kung Fu?
Not Wang Chun, because that's a brilliant song. It's Wing Chun.
Wing Chun.
Like a bird wing.
That's what you started with?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I did the original like taekwondo little kid jump around and kick.
I took judo.
For a second.
Nice. In sixth grade.
Nice. You want to go after it once we're done
no.
here? Okay. All right. Well.
I never got a belt.
Not even one?
No, I went to one competition and it was a drag.
When you sign up, don't they give you at least a white belt? You didn't even get the white belt?
I had a belt. I wasn't walking around with an open
thing. You didn't use an open...
like Rush in the 70s.
Like an open thigh-high silk kimono?
No. I had a regular thick gi.
Oh, look, he's using the vernacular. Yeah. Nice. But back to the gi situation.
Yeah.
These fights, the fight world... Now, the MMA world is most likely the douchiest scene.
MMA is mixed martial arts.
Yes. For those who don't know, but everybody does because it's just everywhere right now.
Right.
And it's really obnoxious. I mean, it's like, you know, just a lot of tribal tattoos and terrible designs and board shorts and long sleeve spandex shirts with like a dragon on a skateboard. You know what I mean? Like, so, like... I hate that aspect of it. You know what I mean? And just like bad like haircuts and like, you know, shaved.
Like those Ultimate Fighting guys. Like douchey kind of like fucking
D-bags. I mean, like it's just like flat build.
But what you do it is like a gymnasium. It's like a place with real dudes, right?
Right. But then also when you go to the competitions though, it's full of these D-bags. And I was like, okay, this competition that I went to recently, I was like, I'm going to go old school. They're all wearing their, like, you know, knee-long baggy board shorts with their pit bull on it. And then they got the dragon long-sleeve spandex shirt and their faux hawk.
At these things?
Yeah.
Wow, that's lame.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so I went, you know what I'm going? I'm going old school, like 1940s strongman. I grew my beard out as big as I could for the time and let my hair go. So I was, I'm going to wolf out on these weirdos. And I put on the tiniest shorts I possibly could. And I went by myself, which was weird. Most people have like an entourage and their backpacks and stuff. And I went by myself in these tiny shorts with my giant beard, just paced around like an animal. And it worked. It was bizarre. I ended up winning the whole thing. I took home gold in the Texas State Division in my division.
No way.
Which was kind of really bizarre. I mean,
recently?
Yeah. Like, well, shit. At this point, you know, a few months ago.
Wow.
But, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
But the great thing is that this fight promotion company.
Yeah.
After this happened, they, you know, they send you information about when the fights are coming up and where they are and registration and like the list of the rules. After I did this, there is a new rule that all competitors must wear a shirt.
Oh.
And I think I had to have something to do with that because I was the only guy that didn't have spandex pit bull shirt on.
Right.
So
somewhere I got to find a dragon on a skateboard shirt for you for your next competition.
Thank you.
To win that shit.
Yeah, I would like that a lot. I just wear that to Whole Foods.
So wait, when did you when did you start?
The which thing?
The Kung Fu.
When I was like 11.
11?
Something like that.
So you've been doing it for, how old are you?
35.
Shit, wow, so you've been doing it for a long fucking time, man.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like you can't do it all the time unless you're, I'm not consistently training all the time because you need like a partner. for Wing Chun, at least. You know, it's not like karate where you're like punching in the mirror and jump kicking in the backyard. It's
have
like
you,
it's,
have you ever tried to chop a board or a brick?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good.
No, that's not true. When I was in eighth grade, I set up the VHS camera.
Yeah.
And we had a big glass vase or vase, if you will, you know, and I set it up and I was going to film myself. This is like one summer afternoon, punching it and it's going to shatter and explode like in, you know, you see in movies.
Yeah.
And I did it and it shattered and exploded, as did the skin in my, on my hand. And
just
exploded. And I didn't know it at first because it was like such a deep cut, like down to the bone.
Oh, but you have it on videotape?
Somewhere, yeah.
Oh, shit. That's pretty badass.
I know. And you see me walking back over to the camera before I realized my hand was split open. Yeah. That there's just like blood pouring and gushing. I had to go to the hospital and get stitches. It was pretty exciting. Look, I still got the scar.
Look at that. Still got the scar.
Got the good. I got a lot of scars, actually. And some of them I don't even know where they came from. Is that weird?
Yeah.
I got this thing on my lip and on my eye. I don't know what happened.
I've got one on my face from where I fell down.
I got one on my leg from a monkey that mauled me.
Is that the truth?
That is the truth.
Where?
I was living in the teepee with Arlo.
But where is there a monkey in the United States?
Well, this is at the it was a wildlife sanctuary.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's what you said.
So we're helping wild animals. The place, like,
you can't bring me like or prosecco and then expect me to remember everything.
Fair enough. But like I mean, are you interested in my monkey scars?
Yeah, I want to hear what happened to you.
It's a long tale of adventure and woe. And that's true. I almost died. Good thing I know Kung Fu, and that's the truth. So there I am.
Dude, you fought a monkey. This is the first story like this in all of the episodes. Come on.
All right. Bring it. Well, it's not so much fought as in tried to stay alive. Okay. But so I'm out there. I mean, this is like this big 100-acre property where they have all these like rehabbed animals. And they had this one like Hannibal Lecter monkey where the reason he was out there was because he literally tore a guy's face off. Like some guy that thought he was going to be his pet. And that's the whole point of this place. It's a rehab place for wild animals that should be in the wild, they can't be. So this is like their resting home. Or if they can be rehabilitated, if they're like local wild animals.
Maybe like a crazy zoo guy, and they get him out of the zoo. Instead of putting him down, they send him to this place.
If it's like a shit zoo that needs to be, and I don't mean the small dog. If it's like a terrible zoo, or like they actually have a whole bunch of like primates that are out there that were rescued from labs, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
They have tigers, you know, lions. That's not true. They don't have tigers. I just lied to you, and I didn't mean to do that. But they do have lions, bears, wolves, you know, monkeys, lizards.
Did you worry for Arlo in that? I mean, did you keep him in the tent?
Here's the thing. We were in the teepee, and we were about 100 yards away from the lion enclosure. And it's like an enclosure.
It's enclosed. Okay.
It's not like I'm just walking around like and there's
Jurassic
like lions.
Park.
No, well, it kind of is. And again, we're going to get to that wife.
Okay.
So and it was weird, man, because like I would be in this teepee at night and lions roar at like 4 a.m. and it's not like the MGM lions glorious roar. It's this weird primal guttural like thing that like rattles the ground. And it's like 4 a.m. and you know, they're in an enclosure. But there's this like innate primal fear that goes, whoa, because this is where we came from. And it's like, you don't feel so tough out here, you know, which was why it was a cool experience where I would, again, had a giant beard. And this was when I had my dreadlocks down to my waist and would wear tiny shorts and like play violin in the middle of the night over a campfire while I was making coffee on a pot. All completely true.
I love you. That is the funniest thing. That's awesome.
And, then Arlo, he was with me, and at the time he was a little pup, you know?
Yeah.
And for those of you that didn't know Arlo, he was this big black and white, like, pit bull. I should get him on my shirt as a...
Yeah.
But he's this big black and white pit bull that kind of looked like the Little Rascals dog.
Yeah.
But at this time he was a puppy. He was like, you could hold him in one hand. So the lions would roar, and he would just, like, shiver and jump into bed with me in my teepee bed, you know?
Yeah.
And in the mornings we'd, like, leave and walk, and he'd follow me. And they would just eyeball him like he was popcorn shrimp.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, they were like, look at this delicious snack. So I didn't really worry for him. And then he would go and hang out somewhere while I was doing my work and, you know, tube feeding baby possums and then cleaning out, you know.
Oh, so you were working at the
sanctuary.
The sanctuary and living on the land.
Correct.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I then...
It would never occur to me to do anything like that.
No.
Ever. No.
No. There's so
It's just weird when someone says that. It's like, wow, I never thought, like, oh, maybe I could go work on an animal.
Would it occur to you to grow out a giant beard, put on tiny shorts, and go wrestle men?
All the time.
Yeah, okay. Make sure we at least have some kind of connection.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too off base. No. I don't want to make you uncomfortable.
No, that's why I'm enjoying this. So go ahead. So
I had, and one endeavor I was doing was like painting this monkey house. You know, like, it's like, so.
Right.
And it is like Jurassic Park, actually, because there's these big enclosures. They're not like in cages.
Right.
People aren't allowed to go out there. It's not a zoo. It's for the animals.
Right.
Benefit. Excuse me, I needed a sip of
Prosecco.
So that, you know, there's nobody out there, and it's this big giant like ranch type area, and this monkey was on the end of the property, and he was out there. They couldn't even put him with other monkeys because he would just F him up bad. And like I said, he tore this guy's face off. Back to that. I don't know if he wore it like Hannibal Lecter, but but he did tear this guy's face up.
Right.
So I would go out there every day, and I just had to paint the. And okay, so the Jurassic Park thing is there's no tops to a lot of these enclosures.
Oh.
There's like mesh and then cages and then electric wires, and it's like 30 feet high, but like electric and then mesh. And it's like, you know, they're not.
If a monkey was really angry and really wanted to get out, he probably could.
Well,
is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is no, that in theory, they're not. That's not supposed to happen.
Okay.
However, So I got to just paint this like lockout is what it's called, which is like the place that you try to get them to go to where you close the gate so that you can go into the enclosure and clean it up. And
okay.
Because, you know, you can't go in there with Furious George.
Sure.
So
Furious George.
So, which was not his name until right now.
Yeah.
But like I am painting this thing, and I'm like, you know, it's this, you know, I got the roller, it's just this big brick building. And every day, because it's like a few day project, he's come screaming across the property. In like shaking the bars and bearing his giant man face, ripping teeth off, you know, like just shaking, reaching through and pulling over my paint can. And I'm like, all right, dude. And he's always freaking me out because it's like he'll be 30 feet away and then you turn away for 2 seconds and he's, you know, jumping at you like Spider-Man. Because they're these extremely strong, ridiculously, you know, their fast twitch muscle fibers are double the density of man's.
Okay,
we wanted to learn
that.
Something here today.
Wow, thank you for the primate lesson.
So I'm out there, I'm doing this, but I'm respecting his anger. Because, you know, he should be in the jungles of Peru, you know, being a badass, hooking up with all the lady monkeys.
Yep.
Going to Pound Town with the lady slut monkeys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dancing with them. Not in this enclosure in Texas, ripping people's faces off. So I'm like, all right, it's fair enough that you're angry at me.
Yeah.
But one day, I was hungover, and it was like 110 degrees in Texas.
Yeah,
and of course I was hungover because it was like 10 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Right.
And I'm painting this thing, and he comes flying at me again, and he pulls over my paint can, and I'm sick of it. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to maybe Caesar Milan this monkey. However, I don't even think at this point Caesar Milan was a guy.
Right.
And by that, I mean he wasn't born yet. This was 1938.
Yeah.
So I'm like a reverse Benjamin Button. Which would mean I aged normally, so that's not accurate at all. So there I am, and he pulls over the paint can, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe like you do with a dog, you're kind of like, maybe I need to show him that I'm the alpha monkey.
Right.
Apparently monkeys work different than dogs, because there's his face like right in mine, and I really got down as close as I could to his face, like inches away, and like stared him in the eyeballs, and his eye, I mean, just like, and he's baring his fangs that are like an inch and a half long. And I'm looking him in the face, and I literally said out loud in English. I mean, I don't know what other language.
right.
Maybe Portuguese. They're Brazilian. This monkey's from Brazil. I should have done, maybe it would have made more sense, but I said, what are you going to do? I really said that to this monkey. And then I climbed back up on my 12-foot ladder and started painting this thing. Well, what he did was, in his simian rage, somehow Jackie Chan'd his way up, like, off each thing and pulled through the electric wires, not giving a fuck, and like hooking up and over and out and death from above while I'm just like painting like an asshole. Suddenly it feels like I got hit in the back of the head with a baseball bat, and he's wrapped around me, his tail's wrapped around me, and he's snapping at my face. I fall off the ladder, which is probably good, because if I was on stationary ground, he probably would have just like bit into my neck, you know? And remember, this is a Hannibal Lecter monkey. So I'm like, as I'm falling, not the face. It's my moneymaker. Not the face.
Yeah.
So we go down. I throw him off of me. I'm on my chest in the gravel. He's on his chest in the gravel. It is like a Bruce Lee quick zoom, I bet, if there was a cameraman there. To his face, to mine. And he jumps up in the air, and I jump and spring off the ground, and I do the most beautiful Wing Chun thrust kick. My Sifu, which is the Chinese word for sensei, would be so proud. Yep. Perfect form. I'm in the air. My cowboy boot, which I was wearing at the time, gives a sickening thud to his face as I land on my back. And I'm thinking, success, I knocked this son of a bitch out. And I'm on my back, and I get up, and he's just standing there staring at me. And it's like he does like a wipe off of his face and tastes his blood, which he doesn't do that. But again, you can imagine.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, oh, no. And from there on, it was about 45 minutes of me trying to survive. He was wrapped around me like King Kong on the Empire State Building, snapping. I was punching. I was doing like, I threw like a rock at his head, and he dodged it. And I'm like, what? How monkeys learn to, I didn't know they could dodge. And it was, no shit, really intense. That's where this scar on my leg comes from. So.
How did you finish it?
I start backing away, and I mean, this thing's going on for a long time. I'm swinging at him, punching at him, and I'm taking a step back. He's taking a step forward. It's like a old west kind of deal.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I know if I turn and run, he's just going to mow me down, because it's like I can't show him fear.
Right, right.
And I think that the kick in the face at least let him know that I'm not going to just let him tear my face off.
Yeah.
You know, so he had a little respect for me, I'd like to think. I'd like to assume. So, and there's also the work truck I'm in, where the walkie-talkies are, I should get to, but the windows are open, and I could see myself getting in there, and him diving in the window. It's a horror movie, the truck's rattling, and then the spray of blood on the windshield. Yeah, you know, that would be me. That would be the end of me. So, can't get to the work truck. I'm backing up. He's taking a step forward. I'm punching, kicking, dodging. He's doing the same thing. And finally, once he got out of this thing, he was a little bit disoriented as well. And so once we got like farther and farther away from his territory, he started kind of like looking around. And when he would look around, I would jog backwards. Not turn and run, but like, and then when he stopped and looked at me, I'd stop. And then to try to create distance. And then finally, I created enough distance to where he kind of started going up a tree for the first time. And then that's when I sprinted for the hills, and there you go. And then they had to go get four-wheelers and dart guns. And like I said, Jurassic effing Park.
Like shoot him.
Dart gun. Now, two things that came out of this that are pretty cool is
where was Arlo?
Probably in the teepee shivering because the lions were roaring. What an effed up time for him. No wonder he turned out so feminine and bizarre. But like, it was an awesome experience, actually. It's like, at the time, you don't know what's going on. It's like, you're not worried about checking your cell phone and like, what girl you're going to try to play rock and roll finger pie with that night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, you're just like existing. It's like a pure state of zen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you don't need to be Buddhist.
It's primal.
You don't need to be Buddhist. Throw yourself in a monkey cage.
Yeah.
There you go. And then you're
surviving.
Like, that's existence in the moment. Like really, you know?
Yeah.
And, the other thing I was, you know, once I got out of his territory, animals aren't malicious. He was defending his turf.
Yeah.
Which was a total standard thing for this big male angry.
It wasn't like Jaws, like he hunted you down.
Yeah, yeah. So once we got out of his area, that's why he kind of started going, okay, fine, I got you out of here. It's like, I proved my point. Guess what? I win, bitch. So, which he did, obviously. And then, I went back 2 weeks later to see him because I didn't want to leave it like that.
Yeah.
Even in my head, like, because it was pretty...
You needed some closure.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was pretty like...
traumatic.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It really was. It was a really weird experience. And when I did this, I mean, I'm not making this up. He put his tail through the cage and I grabbed it and he kind of like wrapped it around. It's like we shook hands and then he kind of crawled off and it was like, all right, fair enough. It was like he
won. Weird. Monkeys are gentlemen.
Yeah, he was a gentleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a 30 style boxing.
Hey, we did it. Yeah.
Yeah, we did this.
Yeah.
Proven. Yeah. It's like he wasn't trying to knife me later or shiv me, you know what I mean? And also just because he was in prison, he did have like a skull cap on and like one gold tooth and like little braids. That was the only part of the story that's not true.
That's nuts. So tell me what happened when you realized you weren't into acting. Let's go back to New York.
Okay, now we're back in from a monkey fight back to New York.
Monkey fight in an animal shelter back to New York, and you leave the school for dramatic arts.
Yeah.
Because you're going to play music. And were you playing music when you were up there acting before? Well, that's did you go like, okay, now I got to go do this now?
Well, no, I'd always kind of like kind of played for my friends in high school, like sitting around campfires and again, right. small town Texas, playing like Brown Eyed Girl 30 times.
Sure.
And then changing it to Green Eyed Girl because this yeah. one chick I liked had green eyes.
I love you. Yeah.
And then she'd like, that I'd look awesome. At her. I never even kissed that girl. What a mess.
But you remember those, don't you? The ones you worked for.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so.
The ones you worked for.
Yeah. So I was in New York and these people were brilliant and I didn't feel brilliant. I was still, you know, 19, self-conscious and just trying to be James Dean, you know, and it's like, I was like, I'm out of my league here. So I kind of just stopped. I put acting away.
Is that where he went to school? Or no, he no. went to the,
I'm not sure where
what do you call it? The one, the James, the one with the guy that asked the questions.
Oh, the James Actors Lipton, Studio. Actors
yeah.
Studio.
Yeah. Didn't he?
I don't think so. I could be completely
wrong.
He's
like a Stanislavski guy?
Yeah. That, and which is the Academy as well. There's a bunch of people that came out of there. Like Robert Redford went to the place I went okay. and all these people.
Okay, but, so sorry.
It's okay, yeah. But don't you ever mention that to me again. So I fell out of my league because these dudes were doing character development. I was like drinking Lone Star and playing my guitar to girls still.
Right.
And I was like, this says something about what I should be doing. Because like I was writing songs while these guys were like
developing, you know, characters.
Yeah, and getting
lines.
Genuinely involved, like
yeah.
wanting to the craft of acting, yeah. you know, not the yeah. art of it.
Sure.
Not like, hey, I want to be famous.
No.
Which
really
wasn't
working
really, which wasn't my drive. It's just that I like to perform and entertain. And so I thought that that was a natural thing to do.
Sure.
It wasn't that I was like, hey, man, I want to be a movie star. I mean, I guess I'd be lying if I said that wouldn't be cool. But
yeah.
that wasn't my goal. You know,
right.
I just was like, I like to entertain and perform. And I never took myself seriously as a musician because my brother was this like brilliant concert pianist that, you know, that's what he was doing with his life.
Right.
And I wasn't. So I kind of just thought that was the side thing.
Right.
And
instead
then,
of competing, you found
yeah.
another thing that you could make your own.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even an attempt to compete. It just didn't enter my mind as in like I could possibly be, actually be, you know, a musician.
Right.
For real. And then little by little it happened. I came to back to, I moved back to Austin. I guess not even back. I just moved to Austin. And I went to St. Ed's here.
What were you studying then when you went there?
Man, I studied all kinds of stuff, of course. I started with philosophy, surprise, surprise. And then went, I'm over it. Because all they did was talk about old dead white men, and it really annoyed me.
Yeah.
I was like, let's get in some tribal shit. Let's get real. Why is this the only thing that's valid?
What do you mean tribal philosophy? What do you, like American Indian philosophy?
Or yeah,
like...
well, not even that specifically. It's just that it's, to me, it's such a, like...
Like instead of Kant and fucking all these guys,
well,
let's,
everything
let's go to another
well,
thing.
Well, just Western philosophy is all based on everything that's... It starts, you know, with the Greeks and goes
right.
up, and it's all based on what is their predecessors. But what if the predecessors were not necessarily, you know, correct? And it's just to me, there's a lot of stuff in Western philosophy that is left out and or not considered valid. And to me, it was very frustrating and obnoxious.
Like what?
Just like the spirituality of things. They just tried to, I think they tried to turn everything into a scientific process.
It's all intellectualized.
Intellectualized and science, you know, and put into like the scientific method, which I get, but I do not believe that the scientific method is the end all be all.
Right.
I don't think that truth has to be able to be proven by science. And that's kind of the Western thought, is that it's not valid, accurate, or true unless it can be proven by definition, the scientific method. And I don't think that's true. I think there are things that are bigger than that. That we cannot necessarily understand,
yeah.
but that's the whole point. And they try to understand, and they go, if you can't understand it, then it's not real.
And it seems like, it does seem like you have to make a choice to either, you can't be like a spiritual person of science or a...
Which I find ridiculous.
A scientific believer, like you're either a creationist or an atheist.
But see,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, I find that concept ridiculous. I don't think they have to be separated.
Right.
You know?
Well, it seems like that. It seems like probably most of the people, at least in this country, probably think like that.
Right. I would agree.
They're just extreme fringes that get a lot more attention because they're vocal.
Yeah. I would agree. But that's my thing.
People that think like us don't go around going like, hey, you got to believe both. Because
yeah.
it seems like that's kind of the norm anyway.
It's like, why can't it be both? Why
right.
does it have to be one or the other? They're not inherently contradictory.
Right. At St. Ed's, you'd think that in a school that's based in like at least a
yeah, I mean it's a Catholic school,
yeah.
but it's still a college where the
what
professors...
were you raised? Were you raised in religion? Catholic?
But not really. I mean, Christmas Catholic. You know what I mean? We'd go to church on the holidays, basically.
But you didn't, like, do First Communion? Like,
no, I did.
You did First Communion. But it wasn't, like, a thing?
It wasn't a thing.
An event?
No, no.
Neither was
Because my parents were raised Catholic, and they...
suffered from it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean...
Especially Italian like that. Like, mine's Cuban and Italian, the same kind of fucking thing. Like,
just
my
all
mom
the guilt
like,
and the,
yeah.
like, everything you do is wrong,
yeah.
and everything's bad.
Yeah,
and so, you know, it's like, everything you think is probably evil, in,
yeah.
you know, so...
But,
and,
you know, I always liked the pageantry of the Catholic Church.
I know, a lot
you
of
know,
people...
growing up going to it, and I go to, like, a regular... Not regular, but, like, say I went out with... Remember Sandy? Her family's,
yeah.
like, this sort of, like, just Christian, but it's like... Hey, you guys ready to party? And
like,
the guy has one of those headset mics.
Yeah,
he's having
yeah.
a good time. There's like a rock band.
Oh, yeah.
Playing,
like, there's nothing that,
songs
like,
of praise and worship.
There, yeah, there's nothing like Christian music on a guitar. That's what I love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What I like is going in there and it's in a fucking like dark thing on a huge pipe organ that fills this room. And there's this fucking intense smell of incense and it's dimly lit. Jesus is never happy in any picture.
Oh, no, no.
He's bleeding stuff. Everyone's sad and like the... It's
yeah.
all like fucking... It's awesome.
I think it's...
To me, you know, that's awesome.
No, and you know what that is? It's, that's the ritual, which is lost in a lot of our culture.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is very cool about Catholicism.
To make those groovy rock and roll churches.
Yeah, exactly. To make it more accessible. But I think the whole point of ritual is that it's like a deeper mythology. It comes from like our... deeper psyches, and that's why it exists, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
that has been hugely lost in our culture. It's even been lost in Catholicism. There's a whole new movement called, specifically the term is charismatic Catholicism, and a lot of it is going on in Mexico and South America to try to convert people because they're starting to lose them to other more
fun
rock and roll and
yeah,
fun
yeah,
religions.
Yeah. There's nothing fun about because
yeah,
like,
no.
they really teach you like, hey man, this is bad shit.
Yeah, everything
first
is wrong.
First of all, you got to feel bad for everything you've ever done. You got to go tell this guy or you're going to burn for eternity. And everyone's sad. Nothing is happy. The happiest thing is turn around and say hi to your guy behind you. Hey, peace be
with
you.
That was a great time, though.
Yeah.
I always felt as a little kid it was pretty cool. It was like I was real nervous, but I turned around and shook some weird dude's hand.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
But it was cool.
Were you ever like sad, like you'd see a pretty girl like across the aisle and be like, shit, why weren't we by there? I could totally do my hi.
No, because I didn't go when I was at the age of when I met the ladies yet.
Okay.
I was still, I mean, I guess I did at the occasion, but I was still like a kid.
Right.
You know, and when I was a kid, I did find it valid and I found it moving. And I think that there's a point to it. And like I said, the ritualism and again, I don't like disbelieve any religion. I think the doctrine gets confusing, but I think that, and I don't want to sound like a 18-year-old girl about all religions are the same. It's just a different path to it. But that's
that sounded like Nick Swartzen.
But that's kind of what I believe. So
yeah.
maybe I am like an 18-year-old girl in that.
Well, maybe that's not. I mean, you know, look, that's a good way to believe. So you're in St. Edward's.
Yeah.
You're studying philosophy. Then what'd you switch to after that?
And
were you playing?
Actually, no. You know what? I started with acting again there. No, I think I started, I don't remember, I'm getting confused, because I left and went back, because I went back to New York, I lived in New York twice, and then Austin, see, I think I totally lied to you, I went to New York the second I graduated high school, and just hung out for a while.
And then you came back.
And then I came back,
and then
went
you
to school,
went to...
and then I went back to the academy.
Okay.
In New York.
And then you,
then
when
back
you left
to
the academy.
St. Ed's. Then I came back to Austin and went to St. Ed's.
Okay.
And then...
Were your parents like, hey, dude, what's going on here?
Rob. No, fortunately
never
not.
Cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
What about your brother? Did he say, come on, Rob?
No, no, no. He actually, I feel like, I would like to hope. No, I mean, I know this is true. He and I are very close. Like, has always admired the fact that just as much as I have admired his, like, dedication and diligence. I mean, he was like the valedictorian. He went to Columbia University.
Right.
He also was the starting quarterback in the small town Texas.
And the concert pianist.
And the valedictorian and the concert pianist. And I've always admired his diligence, but he's kind of always admired my complete opposite because I've done things like fought monkeys and lived in teepees, you know. So it's been a good balance, you know. And our parents were always, you know, into that too, and they thought it was great.
That's good.
So I'm very fortunate for that.
Yeah, that's really good. Okay, so you come back to St. Ed's. Did you start playing here when you came back?
Yeah,
the second
yeah,
time?
Yeah, absolutely. I started.
What was going on then?
Oh,
what
just
were you
some
doing?
Sweet ass cover songs, my man.
With who?
Just a group of dudes. You know what I mean? Some college freshman dudes, and we just sit on
just
the steps.
Just a group of dudes.
We'd sit on some steps, and like somebody would like roll a cigarette because that's way cooler than buying a cigarette, my man.
Yeah.
And they'd say, "Oh no, it's because it's cheaper." look, you're at St. Ed's. You're not broke. You're doing this because you think it's cool. Whatever. You're 19. I'm not going to judge. So you're rolling cigarettes and sitting on the steps and playing songs and hope the girls gather around, which they don't because they're going to the baseball parties where they're doing jello shots instead of like the dork guys that we really were that didn't know it, sitting around playing music. But
what covers?
All the, you know, Creedence and like the Stones and the Beatles. You know what I mean? Just like the classic rock radio covers.
Yeah.
Thrown in with maybe a little like Smash Mouth.
Yeah.
That's not true. We didn't actually. We never played a Smash Mouth song.
Hey now, you're a rock star. Get your game on.
Damn, we should have. Do you think it's been long enough to where that'll be cool again someday?
It will be. Can I tell you this thing about that song? I didn't like that song. Remember when Mystery Men came out? I was in L.A. and you know the Oakwood?
Yes.
On Barham?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm living at the Oakwood on Barham, and so I went to Universal City, right? Or whatever. No, what's it called where you go and it's that
big... It's like the theme park type deal?
No. It's the mall. That's there, kind of down the freeway from it.
It's Universal something. Universal... It's
City Walk.
There you go.
That's what it is, nice. Universal City Walk.
We played there at the Universal City Walk, B.B. King's House of Blues.
Nice. Well, I used to go there on the day off because I was there by myself, and I didn't. I kind of had friends, but I felt bad calling them sometimes. Like, hey, I don't have anything to do. So I'd just go fuck around by myself. So I went to go see Mystery Men, and then I went down there to kind of walk around and do some shit. And I realized when I saw Mystery Men that I hated that fucking song. And when I went to Universal City Walk, they had like a little kiosk TV playing the trailer for Mystery Men, but playing that song through the whole thing.
Sure.
And it was like every 10 yards. So as soon as the song would fade out, it'd start fading in again.
Oh, yeah.
At another place in it from another kiosk. And I actually left that day because I walked halfway through it and I could see the kiosks all set up. And I was like, fuck, I can't even walk around here without this song. Literally just this song playing.
Yeah, that was like...
And like 20 seconds of it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, God. So sorry. So you guys are on the porch playing the cover songs. No girls, they're all going to baseball parties.
Yeah. And we played some like events, you know, like the dorms were having a crawfish boil that again, none of the hot girls were going to because they were at some party with drinks.
Right. Yeah.
So did that. And then I moved. That's when after that I moved back to New York.
Okay.
And then did all that, which we've discussed, and then I moved back to Austin. And then when I moved back to Austin is when I started Dragonfly Jones.
Wow, that soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
how did that come about? How'd you start that band?
Just wanting to be in a band and really play and take it seriously.
But how did you put an ad in a thing? Or
you... like a Craigslist ad, like, hey, man, just looking for some here's my influences.
Yeah. Pro gear and pro attitude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No druggies. Hey, 420 acceptable or whatever. Like that. I've seen that before.
No druggies.
Oh, wait, no druggies, but 420 friendly. I like, I met them all in college, at school.
Okay.
Not all of them, but the majority of them.
Right.
So, like,
who's the drummer of that band? Why am I drawing a blank on that guy?
Well, you're thinking probably of, because there were a couple. But Matt Brennan, who was our guy when we were working with you.
Yeah.
He's in, I think, San Diego or San Francisco right now. One of the Sands.
Okay. Over there on the West Coast.
Yeah. Because he was living in L.A. when I was out there. And we ran into each other. And I was like, what the hell are you doing here? And then we hung out for a while there. So there you go. There's that. But, so we started playing. And we started playing in Austin. Like, I met, you know, Kyle Cox, our guitar player, at school. Actually, we became roommates. I moved back and I was looking for roommates and somebody was like, this guy needs a roommate. And then just kind of, it was like a very organic thing, you know, people, new people. And we started jamming and then it kind of just came together.
Yeah. Did he have similar influences as you? Because you guys made some good music together.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And
then we went to make that record. How far was that? Did you guys make a record before that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you do that? What happened?
The first record? Yeah. We just got, we were doing pretty well in Austin at the time, you know?
Yeah, you were doing a thing at Lucky Lounge, which is,
we had the residency. But even before, you know what happened was, you know, bands, not always, but sometimes, well, I'd say most likely have their shelf life for what they're doing. When we met you, we were at the decline, you know, as far as I'm personally concerned, you know, where like our bigger days were behind us and it started to go like, you know, rather than more and more people in your audience, you get less and less. And there's a point where you're like, What do you want to do here?
Hit a place, you got to either go up or get out.
Yeah, and we started going, and it started pretty well. And, you know, we used to like opened for the Scabs at Antone's to sold out crowds, like on Saturday nights for a while, like for pretty regular gigs. You know what I mean? Which was awesome. Again, not our music, not our crowd, but like
pretty
cool.
But you
think
they'd like it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of chicks there.
Exactly.
Looking good.
Yeah. So at least, you know, we were playing to 1,000 people on a Saturday night.
Right.
Which was awesome, you know? And then we opened up for, well, kind of. On paper, we opened up for ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd. No. I'm sorry. Sammy Hagar and Lynyrd Skynyrd. Because we won this Battle of the Bands in Dallas, Texas for something. And the like prize was opening up at the Smirnoff Music Garden or whatever the shit it is in Dallas. And we go there.
But you were on a side stage.
Of course.
Like
we're
at
on 3
in
stage.
The afternoon.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, of course. But yeah, still. But still,
I opened for Ozzy like that.
There you go. Hey, guess what? You opened for Ozzy. Yeah. We opened for Skynyrd and Hagar. Yeah. Hagar marked that under who gives a shit. But guess what? Skynyrd, cool, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess who didn't show for that one show because somebody, surprise, surprise, was having heart problems in Skynyrd. No joke. So we just opened for Sammy freaking Cabo Wabo Hagar.
Did you know that I did a cartoon series? There's 3 episodes called Sammy Hagar Man.
No.
Where there's a superhero and his superpower is...
being Sammy Hagar?
No, just saying Sammy Hagar lyrics. And the lyrics freeze the bad guys and it makes them fall down.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. We didn't even stay for him. We left and went to a strip club where we asked the girls to dance to our CD.
That is awesome. Did they?
Absolutely.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
That it actually is. I'll say it's very small. It's very misogynistic to say that. But to be in the strip club and to hear your jam and to see a lady getting naked to it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a...
pretty neato.
And it was... I mean, we obviously didn't take it seriously. It was like a joke to
sure,
us.
Sure, yeah.
Because again, this was like 3... Don't forget, it was 4 in the afternoon because we just got off the side stage at Sammy Hagar. The Smirnoff Music Center in Dallas. But we also... you know what I am proud of is that I was walking around in the like shit seats because, you know, people were paying big money to get up front. And then there's the like open area, you know, like the hill where people are sitting and watching.
Right. Did he have the Cabo set with him?
Of course.
Did he have like the bar like, hot chicks came out in bathing suits and brought out the shots for everyone?
I mean, I don't know because I left before that.
Okay.
But I know that, you know, it was filling up and there were these like, you know, like redneck, white trash bikers that were like, this is their fucking
oh, yeah.
Time.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So I had all like, you know, the all access pass and everything like that. And we were like, let's just get out of here. Who cares about watching Sammy Hagar?
Yeah.
And also being backstage at Sammy Hagar is not really our thing. Let's go to like some trashy strip club and have them dance to a song we wrote. So we were walking around with the VIP passes. And me and this girl I was dating at the time. And we pick out a couple that looked like they would enjoy this the most.
Yeah, and you gave them the VIP.
Went like, hey, you guys want a VIP help backstage pass? And they're like, man, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
Don't be kidding me right now, because, you know, it's like, and we gave it to them, and you know they went home and made the sweetest love after that romantic night, front row, Sammy Hagar.
Those kind of guys are always the guys that like, what you want? Hey, honey, show them your titties I bought you. Show them titties I bought you.
No, he couldn't afford them, trust me. Okay. That's why he was in those seats. And by seats, I mean
show
the lawn.
Show them titties I leased you.
Yeah.
So
Dragonfly Jones declined.
Declined. We, you know, made a record.
We just kind of didn't. We were young and didn't know what we were doing, you know? And also, I think...
you know what?
Also,
this is...
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I tell you from my perspective on the outside?
I remember
you guys asked me to do it. I went and checked it out. I was like, okay, I get this. I'm a guy that loves Southern rock.
Yeah.
And I know that at the time, it was like, that wasn't a cool thing to do.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
And when we were talking, there was something, a departure you guys wanted to take. And I was like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Just get more into fucking what you're doing. Just do more of it. Get better. Like, just make it more intense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And we lost some members just due to like life, you know, people that were like, you know what, I'm like, growing up, I'm out.
Yeah.
And so we like, you know, replaced them with different people and stuff like that. And it wasn't just, you know... looking back, it was like one of those like golden times when we were like on tour and playing and like we were all really good friends and everything was going really well. And not to say that we weren't aware of it and didn't like appreciate it, but it's just like it was one, I still do appreciate it. And that's the whole thing. It's like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But I kind of think that like if we were doing Dragonfly Jones music now, it would be much more viable.
Oh, fuck yeah.
When we would walk into like emos with like cowboy boots and bell bottoms and
wasn't
beards.
Cool, but
you're not allowed allowed to walk into these, you know, to the east side without boots and a beard.
Yeah.
And so
boots and a beard.
Look at how obnoxious these are.
Oh, those are great. What are those? What are you playing polo after this?
Maybe. That's another thing I do. I wanted to talk to you about. I'm a professional poker player.
So then the band ended.
Yeah.
You went out to LA. You started the Venus Illuminato.
Right.
And what did you, we were kind of in the middle of LA when we went back to the beginning of your life. But now let's go back to LA.
Yeah, well, I moved to LA.
Were you working there?
Yeah, man, that's where I ended up opening up, my restaurant here, Arlo's. I was, like how I did that, like it was like a plug.
Yeah, it was good.
Thank you. I was, I'm a vegan and I just Googled Craigslist, like vegan, like looking for a job.
Yeah.
And there was this place opening up on Venice Beach.
Oh, cool.
On the boardwalk, literally, not like just in Venice, but like on the boardwalk, brand new restaurant.
Some horrible fucking smells on that boardwalk, food-wise.
There's some horrible things going on there. Yeah, I talk about weird. So do you know where the Jim Morrison building is? Like from, if you're in the alley behind the boardwalk, there's this big mural of Jim Morrison. And it's because, it's like on postcards from Venice and stuff. You'd know it if you saw it.
Where's the record store, the Amoeba or whatever? Isn't there an Amoeba there? There's a big record store that was there.
That might not be there anymore. Might not have been there when I was there. I don't remember a big record store. But
go ahead. Sorry.
No problem. The boardwalk, and then behind the boardwalk is like just the little alley.
Yeah.
And then in that alley, there's like this big Jim Morrison building where it's this giant mural of Morrison, like the famous picture, the pose with the shirt off, whatever. Yeah. And that's where it was. It was like that was the building. Huh. And just side note, the reason that building was painted with the mural was because that's supposed to be was where he used to sleep on the roof when he was drifting around in Venice Beach. Yeah. You know that movie where he's like, I'm stuck on this chick.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he's on the roof, and he's like, "What's your biggest fear? I love death." You know what I'm talking about? That scene there on the roof.
Yeah, of course. Like, that's why I don't really like him. Is mostly because of that movie.
That's not
his
fault.
Like, what a tool.
Maybe that was badass back then when he was like a 22-year-old dude picking up chicks and bringing them to the roof in Venice. Badass. Nobody else was doing that.
That is pretty cool.
I feel like he gets a bad...
I wouldn't say nobody else. I'm sure everybody else was doing that.
That's fine.
I'm sure the guys in the Birds were doing it. Yeah. There was tons of drifter guys.
That's true.
Crosby.
So what? David, you know what? Crosby. Let me have my... but guess what? Crosby, just with his walrus face, just going, "Hey, come to the roof with me."
No, he was cute when he was young.
And actually, was he? And also, I had just kind of turned Crosby into a Wilford Brimley, and I didn't mean to.
No. He was in early on, like he was in fucking Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah, I know, but it's still hard to believe that he was ever good looking.
I don't know.
I mean, I think you do know. You just said he was cute, and everybody heard you.
You know, when Melissa Etheridge had her father,
I just almost spit water out everywhere.
I started looking at him in a different light, and I was like, you know what he did?
You know what? He's got some decent genes. Maybe he lived a little rough life, but he has decent genes. And I don't mean the mom jeans he's wearing now, which is a guarantee he's wearing, with some sports sandals.
So you got a job out there at this restaurant.
So I got a job. And then I worked there for a little while, and it was on the boardwalk, and it was a shit show because it's the Venice Beach boardwalk. And then they go, "Do you want to be a manager here?" And I was like, "No, because I'm out here to be a rock and roll star."
Yeah.
And they go, "Part of your salary will be free rent in the apartment above the restaurant on the boardwalk by yourself." There was a balcony over the boardwalk where there was no buildings between me and the beach.
That's awesome.
And the water, which was like a $3,000 a month apartment that I got for free to manage this little vegan joint.
So, that's fucking awesome.
So it was, talking about just like a unique experience because it's not a residential area. It's not.
Yeah.
And like, my parking spot with Sweet Pea, me and Arlo, was inside the building with the Morrison mural.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to know all the freaks on a regular basis because, such a surreal experience because like Saturday afternoon, there's literally 10,000-12,000 people shuffling by,
Yeah.
But by 9 o'clock at night, everything closes and then all you got are meth heads and homeless people. And it's like ghost town and it's creepy.
Yeah.
And like the juxtaposition is so bizarre, But it was such an awesome experience because it was so unique, It was just weird to live on the boardwalk in Venice Beach. It's such a historic, awesome spot, Like I see my place in like commercials and in movies and stuff. Sure. And I was like, that's my balcony.
Yeah.
Like that's where I used to sit on my balcony and like write the songs that ended up being the Venus Illuminato songs.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. I lived there for like 2 months.
In Venice? Uh-huh.
In a studio that I was recording in. It was really cool. Is there Ceramic Cafe? What's that? Is that Cafe? Ceramic Cafe?
That sounds familiar. Yeah. Where was it? Like Abbot Kinney or something?
I don't know. I don't know.
And then I ended up moving to Echo Park when I got my senses together.
That's a good place.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, not to cause too much dissension, but like, West LA versus East LA, it's kind of like West 6th Street versus the East Side.
Yeah, yeah,
which,
totally.
You know, maybe it's a pretentious thing to say, but it's just like, you know, like Santa Monica is just real douchey.
Yeah.
And then the East Side, yeah, it's douchey, but in a different way. I mean, it's like obnoxiously hipster, but to me, I'd prefer that than, you know, the board.
I did my Christmas shopping at the Promenade.
Oh, I went to the Promenade so much. I'd actually like walk down there, skateboard down there, which I'm not a freaking skateboarder, but Arlo would pull me down the boardwalk. And the thing was so flat that it would really work. And I literally would like use him as mobility around there.
That's wicked.
And then put the, you know, leash on the skateboard.
While you shopped.
And then I'd shop for a sweater vest at Banana Republic. For him, though. For him, actually.
For my dog. So so then you decided to move here and you brought your guitar guy?
Well, here's what happened. I didn't decide necessarily. It was like an accident, kind of. I just needed a break from L.A. Mm-hmm. L.A. is, to me... It, you know, it gets such a bad rap, and I get it. It's like, everybody's like, oh, it's this vacuous wasteland.
Sure.
And it is, but it's also a cultural hub. And I think what it, you know, it's like every night there's something significant culturally happening.
Yeah.
And if you can find it and you want to find it, it's there. Now, is it got this whole superficial side? Absolutely. So what I found when I moved to Echo Park was a great like group of friends.
That's what you need there. Yeah, it works then, out once you got that.
Once you have a great solid group of real people, then it's an amazing city to discover and be in.
Yeah.
And so I got this, you know, it's where the whole Children of the Earth thing started, which was the name of that song that you
played at the beginning.
Which is the name of the album, which was a cult I started. Started it as a joke. Got weirder and weirder. Not really. It's just this big, like, you know, group of people that like grew exponentially, and like we would be playing music and painting our faces and going out to the desert and running around under giant bonfires, and like our violinist is on like the top of some rock and Joshua tree playing his violin in the middle of the night.
Great pictures of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great and
really cinematic.
And that's again one of those like golden times in life, you know, where we had this huge group of people and painted our faces and went out, and people were like, who are you people? What is this? There's like 30 people here with like white face paint on at some hipster show well, now it's the Satellite, but at like Spaceland or know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'd all just show Silver up this Lake. Giant posse dressed all bizarre, which I mean, everybody there has got their own thing, but like we had this strange group, and it was like this joke. It's like, oh, it's, you know, we're the Children of the Earth. And I you know, Buck Mancradle, that's me, the leader, Buck Mancradle. And and it got to where like, and all the girls jokingly called me daddy, right? Because I was like the oldest guy in the group, and like I was the leader of this cult that I created.
Manson.
Yeah, total Manson. And I mean, it was like a joke, but people around us were like, there's all these like teenage girls calling this guy daddy.
Teenage girls?
Yeah, well, 19.
Yeah.
Okay, come on.
Hey, legal.
17, 18, 14. Well, I mean, no. Hey, like, and then this is again when I had my like big, super long hair and giant beard. So like, you know, it was just a really fun, ridiculous time. And one time on my birthday, we decided to go as Children of the Earth for my birthday, the Olive Garden. And so we called the Olive Garden and said, we need a private room for a party for Jay Travolta. Right?
Of course, that's usually where he goes to celebrate his birthday.
Well, this is why they started. They were like, wait, what? Who? Just you know, bear with us. Jay Travolta is coming tomorrow night. We need like a table for 30. And they were like, okay, yeah, whatever you guys need, whatever you need. And we're like, and he, Mr. Travolta is requesting 10,000 breadsticks. And they were like, well, we don't know if we can do 10,000, but we'll keep them coming. We're going to keep them coming. And then we just show up again with our face paint, and like I'm wearing like a fake fur coat, and I've got a giant beard, and like, you know, and you know what? Great birthday party. Yeah. That's all I got to say about that.
That's amazing.
Disappointed Olive Garden staff.
So I could see,
great
like,
birthday.
You blew the curve, and so then you had to get out of LA and go to Austin. Yeah, they wouldn't let you into Olive Gardens anywhere. And
anywhere else, yeah.
Anywhere was the Burbank.
About too many, yeah, exactly. Yeah, actually, it was. It was somewhere in the valley. It really was. It was great. It was like in Studio City.
Right, right.
Come on. Give me a little credit. Hey. Not Burbank. We were in Studio City. No, but so like I just kind of, my time there had ended, you know, like, same like it had in Austin, where the band wasn't doing much anymore. I mean, we kind of were. We recorded and stuff like that. But I personally was getting burnt out. I got to a place where the other thing about LA, as you know, is that it's just difficult.
It's difficult to get
just
around.
Just to exist. It's expensive. I mean, everything there is hard. Unless you're like independently wealthy, you're just always struggling.
And you live like in a place where your whole world is like within 15 blocks.
Yeah, because otherwise, if not, you're on. Yeah. And so, and of course, trying to keep a band together. And at that point, we were like an 8-piece. So like trying to organize practice was like a huge endeavor. And it just, and it's super expensive.
Super expensive, you know, to practice.
And it's like, once you kind of get in the hole in LA by working a coffee shop job because you're trying to play music, how do you get out of that hole? You know what I mean? Where do you come up with the $3,000 for deposit for rent when you've been working at a coffee shop because all you're trying to do is play music every day? So, you know, I was just like, you know what? Time for a change. But I really was just going to take a break. Right. I was just like, I just need to get out for a while. I was not feeling creative. That well had dried up for me. So I just took a road trip with Arlo and ended up back up in Austin and kind of stayed. And before that, we had toured. Like the Venus Illuminato had come and we'd played South by Southwest before. And I had always thought, you know, just in the back of my mind, like for selfish reasons, I was like, well, I think we would do better here for the reasons of these days with like the way social media works and stuff like that. You don't have to be in New York or LA to be in a successful band, you know. It's like you'll be going out there and stuff, but it's like it's not
still regions you could be popular in the South and Southeast and maybe in the East Coast
and there's things are getting bigger and bigger, the world's getting smaller due to social media, the immediacy of media, you know. And it's like you don't have to, people don't have to hear your music only because they bought your record locally because you were on tour in their town or you live in that town,
right?
It's like
they can just
you know what I mean, somebody in Denmark is listening to us right now,
sure,
you know. So it's like, I always thought Austin would be a great place to come out, get like some house kind of out in the country somewhere, grow some weird beards, get on a lot of drugs and do an album.
Yeah.
You know, like a weird barefoot bearded album. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I know exactly.
So, you know, that one album.
Your album.
So my guitar player came out to visit and I was like, I want you to, and we've toured out here more than that, you know, other than just that South By. And I was like, I wanted him to come because he's been my writing partner through the whole process.
Right.
When there's been some interchangeable people within that, you know. So he came out here and I said, come out when we're not playing a show. There's no pressure. I want to show you what Austin's like when it's not ACL or South by Southwest or whatever and see what you think, you know. And we ran around and we had like big talk, like relationship talk. Like, listen, man.
Where are we going?
Do we believe in this?
Yeah.
Are we going to do this? Yeah. Is this going to work? Like, and next thing I know, he uprooted himself and was here, and now we're playing here. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, and we've, you know, it took us a little while because we had to fill in the blanks with the people that didn't come.
Sure.
So,
but you've been getting that together. You sounded great at South by Southwest.
Thank you.
I love what you're doing here, and I'm glad to hear that you're going to be doing some recording with Frenchie.
Yeah,
that'll be great.
Yeah, we're super
excited. Do you guys, do you know when you're going to start that?
Either later this month or early June. So real soon.
Oh, very soon.
Yeah.
Do you know that Frenchie was in a band called Glaze with our friend Brandon, that he moved down here from Oklahoma with this guy Brandon? We both worked at Whole Foods in 1991. That's where we met. I worked. I started off in the meat department, but I was a cashier.
I love Whole Foods. That's where I got the Prosecco.
Yeah, I know. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
And he worked in the grocery department, but then he wanted to record a thing. I lived in this recording studio, but we used a 4-track and recorded a song for them for his band called Glaze. And they had a song called We Are the Astronauts Headed for the Sky. And then there was this bridge where they described the astronaut and what a great astronaut he was. And at the very end, it's like, and he was kosher. That was the end of the thing. It was so awesome.
I
remember that more than 20 years later.
I didn't know if you were going to go awesome or awful. I was waiting for the end of that. It was so awesome. And you went with some. All right, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good.
Fucking awesome.
Can I Google this thing and find it?
I bet.
Glaze, astronaut.
Yeah. We Are the Astronauts. That was
I feel like
album.
If I Google glazed astronaut, I'm going to find some strange.
Porn.
Some tasteful nudes.
Yeah. Glazed astronauts.
Which, by the way, I'm actually here to promote my robfranco.org.edu tastefulnudes.com.
Do you know I've had an astronaut on this show?
No, I did not know that. No. What astronaut was that?
I'm drawing a blank on her name. Katie Coleman.
A lady astronaut?
Oh,
they
yeah.
can do that, now?
She had just come back from a 6 months on the International Space Station. While she was on the International Space Station, she recorded a duet with the flute guy from Sitting on a park
Jethro
bench.
Tull, yeah. Ian Anderson.
Ian Anderson.
Was he in space just floating already?
No, no, no.
It's like I could imagine, though, that he was in space floating
around.
You know
they're making a big deal about this guy now that just sang Major Tom in space?
No, I didn't know about
whatever.
This.
So,
is space the new Facebook?
It is.
All right.
Face space.
Yeah, all right.
So he was on Earth, and she was up there, and they recorded a duet together from space and Earth at the same time. That's how great technology is right now. So,
what do you think about that? All this technology stuff. Are you a fan?
I have a podcast. Of course, I'm a fan.
But don't you think that to a degree, it like
I can make my own show and put it out there.
Yeah, no, I get that. But it's like at the same time, not on that level, but just how connected everybody and everything is at all times. That like we've lost the sense of contemplation.
I don't. You know what? I don't like it. If I could go back and someone said like, hey, do you think we should do this? I'd be like, oh no, it's going to be too weird. But I know that it's not going to change. So I just kind of go with it and try not to worry about it.
Like when I was living in the teepee, you know what? I didn't have a cell phone and Facebook that I was checking, you know? And it's like
you had to fight monkeys.
I didn't have to, you know, and you know what I wasn't doing? Tweeting hashtag monkey fight. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because that's what would happen
that's
now.
When this comes out, I'm going to tweet it. I'm going to hashtag monkey fight.
Because it's like, that's the thing. People now live for their online presence.
That's true.
Like, your online presence is more significant than your real relationships and your real existence.
That's true.
And I agree with you. I don't know what to do about it. It's not like anybody
There's
can change that.
There's nothing you can do. There's people that feel like they really have a handle on who I am.
Yeah.
As a human being from my smart-ass remarks on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah. These people think I don't know the difference between Prosecco and champagne because I put it out there today and I blew it. I blew it. I'm sorry, everyone.
Welcome to social media. So how do people find you guys, the Venus Illuminato?
TheVenusIlluminato.com.
Okay.
Now, this name is unfortunate because we thought it was
Illuminati?
Great. Yeah. Well, no, just because it's like one of those where like nobody can know, especially like you're at a bar and you're like trying to tell some broad what your band's name is. You're like, the Venus Illuminato over like the din of dudes doing jello shots. And they're like, the what?
Yeah.
The Venus Illuminato.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's not the catchiest of names. We thought it was poetic and romantic when we were doing our psychedelic folk project. But now that we're doing this kind of a lot different.
Do you feel like you might change the name?
You know what? We talked about it, but we felt like we already have such a,
social media following.
Shit. Yes. That's what I was going to say. You know?
Now you have such a what?
No, that's kind of what I was going to say. Yeah. You know, it's just like people know who we are to a degree because of the things we've done. And to start over, it's like that's lost.
Yeah.
Lost in space.
And you're doing some acting?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I am. I'm doing it again, full circle. Yeah.
You're back.
So,
are you getting more into it this time?
I am. I'm like...
What are you doing? Well, you got a part in anything?
Yeah.
Anything? Got a Law & Order episode?
Yeah, SVU. I've actually been... I keep getting cast as weirdo creeps. And I thought, growing up, like I said, I'm going to be some hero. Apparently not. Apparently, I'm typecast as this greasy Italian. Most recently, I did this like Lifetime movie where I'm slapping this woman around because she won't get an abortion. And then she hits me in the head with a baseball bat. This is completely true. And also, she was the star of, wait for it, Saved by the Bell, The New Class.
Oh, so I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Think about that when you're high, which you're not, you know.
I will be later and I'll be thinking about this.
Yeah. But so, and I had to beat her up.
I'll be looking out my window for monkeys.
I had to shake her and I'm like, you did this. And I mean, it was like, I probably shouldn't be saying this out in the world because this is probably like, these are these things you don't do. You don't speak ill of the roles and the people you're involved with. But whatever. We're here. We're getting real.
Yeah.
This was the most abysmal script I've ever seen.
Most of those are.
I mean, yeah. So, and I'm like shaking her and they had to put arm pads on her underneath, like the stunt people, because I ended up hurting her a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I got into it. I'm
an
actor.
She ended up calling you, texting you after the thing. Hey, Rob, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You and your trailer?
Yeah. So I'm shaking her and like, you did this on purpose, you slut. And like throwing her on the bed and then she hits me with the baseball bat. I'm hoping it doesn't make it to the screen. And then in a morph.
But it's good money.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice to be able. I mean, it's just. Also, it's just a cool experience, you know, especially like now, again, being able to appreciate it at this point. And the reason I'm able to act, I think, at this point and be better at it now, maybe I wasn't terrible. I was just self-conscious. And I'm at the age where it's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, because that's the one thing that kills acting.
Right. If you're self-aware.
Sense of self. Yeah,
exactly.
You cannot be self-aware. Right.
And when I was 19, I was the most self-conscious. I mean,
sure.
I'm still internally Woody Allen. Yeah. But like, I'm able to at least shut it off to a degree.
Yeah, but yeah, because you want to be, it's hard. It's hard to, you got to have some kind of thing as a musician. That's why that line is hard to walk to be a good actor and a musician, because you have to have some kind of, as a musician, I think you are self-aware. And that's part of the whole thing. But as an actor, you've got to let go.
If you lose yourself in a song, though, while performing, that can be the best performance, you know, for sure. But you still, just the whole thing, though, is definitely a self-aware deal. But I got some, like you were asking, some stuff I've been doing has been amazingly like, are you serious? Which is another reason that Austin has been great right now. Like I was just recently in Sin City 2.
Oh, great.
With like a speaking role and a trailer. And again, though, typecast.
No shit.
Luigi playing poker. Yeah. And it's like wonderful. Yeah. So here I am again, Luigi. A scumbag. Yeah. And then I was in this commercial as a terrorist. It's like, come on, people. I thought I was a hero.
No, nope. Oh, you're a terrorist.
I'm a scumbag. Yeah.
That's insane.
I'm Luigi. I'm a wife beater. I'm a terrorist.
What else are you in? Matt, that's great. Do you have an agent and stuff?
Yeah, I do.
You got a headshot?
Yeah,
it's out there.
Do you want me to sign it and put it on the wall after
this? I would
this?
Love it. I have. Oh, Amanda Ceballos behind the piano.
Well, there's no room for one here. I'm not going to give you a headshot.
How much time do you spend at the food trailer? Do you have a staff that staffs it?
Or I do. There? Yeah, it's a mixed bag. I mean, it's a ton of work.
It's a lot of work, man.
Yeah, it kind of came as a second side thought, and it turned into like a career that wasn't planned. But again, it makes me able to like facilitate things, and things are going really well. We just like last year we won best new joint and best runner up for like best veggie burger in Austin.
Oh, great.
So things are going really well, you know. It's pretty awesome.
How do people find out like Arlo's?
You can do the there's Arlo's thing? Arlo's truck. Yeah, and then Facebook Arlo's, you know, Austin and Yelp Arlo's and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah. But it's cool. It's like, you know, I'm not and how I got started with this is when I got back to Austin, just as in a think piece, I hit up the like investors that I was working with in Venice Beach at that place. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, are you guys ever interested in doing something in Austin? And they were like, maybe talk to me more. And I was like, oh, no shit. And then I was like, you know, we started talking. Next thing you know, I opened up Arlo's. So, and then, yeah, I've got a problem is that half of the staff is the Venus Illuminato.
Oh.
So it's hard to play shows.
Because of how the gig it closed down.
Yeah, basically. I mean, not really, but, really half the staff, but only half. But yeah, so it's kind of.
What's the, tell me some of the best dishes. Recommend something to someone going there as the guy.
You got to get the bacon cheeseburger. The vegan bacon cheeseburger that won the second runner-up to best veggie burger in Austin.
What do you use as bacon?
Everything's made in-house. Are we going foodie?
Well, I just want to know what you're using as bacon.
It's a seitan that's marinated that we make in-house.
Uh-huh.
And the patty is also made in-house. You know, we're not like flipping frozen Boca burgers from HEB and Congress and Old Twerk.
No, you make the burgers yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's handmade there and local and all that kind of stuff. So.
Do you go to the farmer's markets and stuff to do you think?
To stock the plate? No, because we need bulk. We need, you know, that's too hit and miss.
That's exciting. I need to go to it. I think I had some stuff while back when it was behind
the Volstead.
Volstead, yeah.
Yeah, perhaps.
I did. And I enjoyed it, but I was pretty drunk.
But you don't remember what you had.
I don't. I might have had some kind of veggie burger or something.
Maybe. That is kind of what we sell, so most likely.
Yeah.
Like our voices have gotten quieter and quieter.
So quiet.
All right.
When can we, so people can go find the venusilluminato.com.
Yeah.
Just go there.
And of course, Facebook.
For all your things, all your needs.
Right.
It's a good website. It's got a lot of good photos. Got all your music up there.
Yeah. I mean, we're, like I said, the stuff that we're doing now has evolved again. Now that we've got a different rhythm section, we're not nearly as, we're doing a lot more kind of shorter, dancier, tougher songs. It's taking on that a little bit. Not as big as the big, wide gypsy spectrum.
Right.
I mean, we still have that and we go back and forth, but It's kind of evolved into its, and it's like basically its third incarnation. Like this album will be, you know, as different as the first two. You know, it'll be its own incarnation. So,
well, good man. I wish you luck. We'll have
Thank you, sir. Have
you back again when you put out your album.
Love to be back.
Is there anything I'm missing? It's been lovely talking to you.
I don't think so. It has been.
It's always
good
hanging out with
you. Yes, I miss you.
Yeah, I miss you too.
Well,
I'm glad we'll be seeing each other more. Thanks for coming to my gig the other night.
Yeah,
and we'll. Thanks for being on here.
What do you have going on next? Let's do that.
I don't know. You know. I have shows, but when this comes out, those shows will
by
be
then
over.
It'll be over. Right on.
Yeah, you know, I play with Skyrocket. That's right. Been a pretty big
regular
job
yeah.
for me. And I do this all the time. So everyone come back and listen to these podcasts and you'll hear what I'm doing because I usually tell people.
Right on. And again, thank you, man, for having me. And it's wonderful
thanks
to see
for
you.
Being. Good to see you. Thanks, Rob.
You got it, brother.
All right. My guest, Rob Franco, the Venus Illuminato. You can go see them on SoundCloud. Check them out. And various places, right? You can get their record, listen to it, do your thing. I'm glad I got to see you, Rob. Glad we got to catch up. Glad we got the monkey story. That was incredible. Remember, when you're on your computer, rocking out, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. While you're there, rate us, leave a comment. It helps us. It helps our overall rating. It will help us get advertisers and keep this show free for you. While you're on the internet, also like our Facebook page. How did I get here? You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy. All right, let's have a little bit more Venus Illuminato. Thank you so much for listening. You guys have a great day.
Climb Olympus, mouth purple by my wine. And in the distance are the heavens we will climb. Sleep well, my dear, your dream away. Dream well, my love. Morning will wake and we're gone. The dog-eared pages in your works of love are turning quickly as we look down from above. Well, my dear, your dreams away. Dream well, my love, the morning will wake and we're gone. The swallows fly now, headed for the shore. The water runs clear, and there is questioning no more. Sleep well, my dear, your dreams away. Dream well, my love, the morning will wake, and we're gone. When there are flowers in your eyes, and they are growing with the new sunrise. Wake now, my dear, your day awaits. Rise now, my love, this is our fate, and we're gone.